holidays here. Time for Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, with your host, Reuben Truthmaker.
You can't handle the truth.
The phones are lighting up, and you guys are live.
Good morning, Costa. Sorry, I was just rocking out there for a second, drifting back years and years back. If you don't recognize that, that was the Grateful Dead. And we mentioned on the show last week and the week before that we've inherited this, the radio station here, KHMB, a large collection of vintage Grateful Dead recordings from live shows that we're going to be using to on one of our Thursday Night Live sessions coming up. So, okay, and by the way, my name is Reuben Truthmaker, and this is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, the coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. That's right, I'm sitting here right now, live in the studio with Frank the Engineer, the interns, and the rest of the assembled KHMB staff who sits in on this show. It's a large staff. Frank, no rim shot on that? I mean, come on. All right. Anyways, anyway, we're here live. It's 9:01 a.m. right here on Main Street in beautiful, sunny Half Moon Bay, California. Okay, I'm Reuben Truthmaker. Please don't forget that. And we are here every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on KHMB Radio, 100.9 FM, rocking 1710 a.m., and streaming live on KHMBRadio.com. Coastside issues, hot topics, and you and me. And that's us. So let's get into it right now because we've got a big show, a really, really big show. Only Frank will get that. We'll get that impersonation there. Let me try to get a really, really big show. Okay, that was terrible. But old people such as myself and Frank might know who I'm referencing. If you do, hey, give us a call. 650-560-9851. Do it. Just call in. All you have to say is the person's name. I'll say yes or no, and then you can hang up if you don't like to talk on the air. If you do like to talk on the air, then let's talk. 650-560-9851. Okay, here's today's topics. Harbor Nancy. You'll know who I'm talking about if you know who I'm talking about. Final frame for Seabowl, wiping a tear. And today we have a Shooting the Breeze live interview with Granada Community Services Board District Board member Nancy Marsh. Okay, we're going to talk to Nancy about her role as a board member for GCSD and, of course, about the attempts to develop a community center for the Midcoast. All right, this is your chance, Coastsiders, to weigh in on whatever's on your mind that's related to the Coastside, so do it. I just gave you the number. I'll wait a few minutes before I give it again. You can also send an email to coastalwindage@gmail.com. All right. Want to thank Cameron's Pub and Restaurant, the sponsor for the show. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hands over the heart. Eyes uplifted to the sky. Take off that crown, please, Frank. There we go. Okay. It's a true English pub. I like to always count the number of beers because when I'm sitting there at the bar at Cameron's, I usually get fixated on things like that. Wow, you have 14 different kinds of vodka. That's interesting. But they have 19 beers on tap. 19 beers on tap. Not 19 beers to choose from. 19 beers on tap. I don't think I really need to go any further than that in touting Cameron's Pub and Restaurant. But I will, because they also have 60 plus beers in bottles. And the thing that probably is the best thing, it's the atmosphere of the place, right? It's kind of a Tudor architectural style building down there at the end of Main Street, the southern end of Main Street. It's got a old-fashioned London double-decker bus out front. And when you go inside, it's just one of these places that there's all kinds of nooks and crannies, all kinds of TV screens, all kinds of stuff on the wall. You got your pub grub, video games. It's fun. It's just a fun place to go, especially as an English pub, especially on like a foggy evening. You know, like I've been to Scotland many times, and it just really reminds me of like ducking into a little neighborhood pub or tavern, getting into a booth. It's dark. It's wet outside. It's nice and warm and cozy inside. Have a beer with your chums, with your mates, and have some fun. So thank you, Cameron's, for sponsoring this show. Excellent. Okay, now on to the important data for you that we give to you every Friday morning that nobody else on any radio station, live or not live, gives you anywhere else. And I'm just going to say it. In the country / the world. All right. Exclusive data right here. And that's the air quality report. Okay, this is the quality of the air you are breathing right now, right here. Okay, let's remember the scale. 0 to 50 is incredible. 51 to 100 is good. Over 100, not as good. Let's get to it. Today in El Granada, 12, which is pretty much like that. I would say, like, if we surveyed El Granada every day for a year, that would be the exact average, 12, which is incredible, right? I mean, we're so lucky. 15 today in Half Moon Bay, 23 in Redwood City, 11 in Santa Cruz, and today in Reno, Nevada, the home of the National Bowling Stadium. And if you've never been to Reno, well, congratulations. But if you go to Reno, go to the National Bowling Stadium. It's pretty incredible. Yeah, I've been there before in honor of my gramps. We'll get to that later in the show when we talk about Seabowl. But check that out. Today in Reno, one. One in Reno. Hats off to you, Reno. Okay, yes. Yep, you're right. We did have an earthquake on Tuesday. Around 6 a.m., we had a 3.5 Richter scale temblor. The epicenter was in Pacifica, east of Highway 1, across from the quarry of approximately along Maury Ridge. I went and looked at the USGS website, and it looks like the initial quake and the aftershocks were all kind of right along Maury Ridge in a kind of an east to west line. It lasted for about 5 seconds. It woke my wife and son. Of course, I slept right through it. They told me when I got up later that they thought a tree had landed on the house. So then I had to go around and look around. And of course, there weren't any because it was, in fact, an earthquake. Okay, here's the parlor game for you. It was a toss-up whether there were more aftershocks from this earthquake or more unique posts. Not comments, more unique posts about this earthquake on Nextdoor. I had the interns check with Vegas on this, and the over-under on aftershocks was 6. Per their USGS earthquake website, turns out there were 16 aftershocks, ranging from 0.8 to 3.4. And the over-under on Nextdoor posts about it was 10. Without even thinking, I would have taken the over on that in a second and put my entire life savings on that. And in fact, I had the interns go and look, and they stopped counting after the 15th different, was that an earthquake? Post on Nextdoor. I mean, people, I don't understand this behavior on Nextdoor. Whether it's 92 being closed, the internet being out, or an earthquake, why do people feel compelled to add an additional one-line post, was that an earthquake? When there's 15 of them, literally, you had to have passed those 15 and just scrolling for 2 minutes on Nextdoor. We don't need another one. Just add a comment to an already existing post. I don't understand it. Anyway, so we stopped counting at 15 unique posts about was that an earthquake. Now, the coast side has some minor faults. Again, no rim shot, but no pun intended, but thank you. There we go. Let's try that again. Now, the coast side has some minor faults. No. All right. Well, we're working on it. We're working. There we go. Okay. No pun intended. But earthquakes are not really, I mean, yes, when you buy a house here, you have to sign the earthquake form, whatever. The earthquakes are not really an issue here. We do have some minor fault lines, like out on Seal Cove, I think there's one. But as evidenced by the relatively minor damage suffered in both 19 Capistrano Road, basically right across the street from the Half Moon Bay Brewery. She has been there for several years. In fact, this was, I really can't even believe this. If you pull up the harbor, a map of the harbor on Google Maps, and you zoom in, you will see that an icon, you know, they'll see icons for Half Moon Bay Brewery and Barb's Fish Trap and Catch Joanne and other things like that. Somebody has inserted an icon on Google Maps labeled Nancy's Hiding Spot because she was so well known as a figure at that spot. She lived there. She lived there. She slept in a tarp under some bushes, and she treated this little area as her own home. She, on good days, she aired out her tarp. She swept up the steps with a broom near her spot, and she seemed to enjoy herself. But on bad days, she yelled at passersby, including racial epithets at people of color. She relieved herself in the adjacent field and was generally, not generally, but often naked in public as she changed clothes or bathed herself or went to the bathroom, okay? And basically carried on as if that public sidewalk there were her private property, yelling at people when she was, you know, having bad days, yelling at people for just walking by. Many, many times as I rode my bike home from a bike ride, she would yell at me as I passed by. And I will admit, it made me angry. I'm just riding my bike here. Why are you screaming at me? Okay, but all right. Locals, visitors, and business owners have tolerated and been tolerant of her for years. She's been there for years, which I have often thought, and I know others have, seems odd that somebody would be allowed to live here in a tarp under these bushes on this public sidewalk in a highly frequented area by both locals and visitors. But it happened. Some people even brought her food and supplies. But clearly, and again, on good days, you know, it was fine. But clearly she had her issues, and her presence in the public area and her abusive behavior, the racial epithets are, I'm sorry, that is just not acceptable. And if you are not able to control yourself, something needs to be done about it, because it's not acceptable. And so those actions and her abusive behavior in general just became too much, and I think people had reached their limit. Nancy has been a kind of this semi-tragic figure on the coastside for years. Prior to moving to the harbor, somebody posted on Nextdoor that she was squatting in a shed on the property of a vacant home in El Granada. So it's not known what her story is, how long she's been homeless and why. But she's been around for a long time. Well, last week, Nancy was removed from her spot at the harbor during a medical emergency requiring an ambulance visit. She was apparently transported away from the harbor in an ambulance. And reports are that she was uncooperative about having to leave. Now, I've heard that she had a broken arm. So it was clearly something that needed medical attention, but she didn't want to go. Earlier this year, Nancy actually did, I'm going to put in air quotes, move away from the harbor. She left. It's been reported that her daughter or family member made arrangements for Nancy to come and live with them somewhere up north, and she left for a while, but then it was only a few days and she was back. And I will say that while she was gone, people were kind of like, it's like a sigh of relief of like, it's not that people have anything against her personally, but her presence there was disturbing and unsettling, especially because of the screaming and the racial comments. So she did return. But now she's gone and people think that this is going to be permanent. In fact, the Harbor District, who apparently has jurisdiction over this spot, questioned the Harbor District, why was this allowed to go on for years? But that's for another day. Maybe we'll have somebody for the Harbor District in here for a Shooting the Breeze live interview. We'll ask them. But anyways, now that she's gone, the Harbor District has piled a bunch of large wooden logs in her quote-unquote hiding spot. So these logs are too heavy for Nancy to move. If she ever came back, I don't think she would be able to be in that spot. Okay. Again, many wonder why her presence there and her behavior were tolerated so long by so many. Well, one reason is because, I mean, people have empathy, and a lot of people saw her as a sympathetic figure. I mean, it's okay to have empathy for someone that you think is doing something wrong. I mean, Nancy had her issues. We've all got our issues, and I hope that people have empathy for me for my issues. Okay, here's what somebody wrote on Nextdoor. Nancy and her spot were a beautiful pocket of kindness created by a lot of individuals helping out. I think that somewhere inside of all of us is a desire to do more than just make money and shop. That little pocket of kindness by the fish trap was a testament to the goodness of us. I mean, I don't disagree with the sentiment there, but the reality is it was inappropriate. I mean, it was definitely a sad situation. And one can be sympathetic with Nancy while also being realistic about the fact that this was an issue. It was a public health issue. It was a mental health issue. It's a rule of law issue. And it's an issue of social priorities. All of that is true. But what is also true in my mind is that her residence there was inappropriate. And I hope that people don't really listen anymore. We're divided into our tribes, right? And like, you know, it's us against them and political or whatever else the divisions are. And so people don't really listen anymore. They're already set in what they believe. But I hope that people are listening to me right now, because I'm just going to state my position again as clearly as I can on this. And for one reason, to try to reduce the number of angry emails I'm going to get on this. But I feel sorry for Nancy. I'm empathetic with her situation, and I hope she gets some help. But her residence at the harbor was completely inappropriate. Okay. If you feel strongly about homelessness, physical and mental wellness, housing, social justice, and the rule of law, here's your chance to get involved. Coastsiders, the San Mateo County Civil Grand Jury is now being seated. It's taking applications for its 2023-2024 session. This is an independent investigative body created by the California State Constitution, composed of 19 citizens. The grand jury organizes itself into committees, and each committee sets its own program of investigations and interviews of various departments and functions of local government. Okay, so it's basically it's impaneled to act as an arm of the court, and it's authorized to by the state constitution as such. And its purpose is to kind of be a voice of the people and a watchdog for the citizens of the county. It's a volunteer fact-finding body with the potential to recommend constructive changes. So if you want to change something about the way local government works, hey, here's your chance. Next door is not going to do anything. Being on the San Mateo County Civil Grand Jury, that's a major, major deal. The work is demanding. It's a one-year term running from July 1st of this year to June 30th of next year. Service on the grand jury calls for diligence, impartiality, courage, and responsibility, which is why I am precluded from applying. You get a two-day training workshop and an orientation period. Here's the rewards. Money, fame, fortune? No, no, and no. Your rewards for grand jury service come mostly from an increased knowledge of local government, which we could all benefit from. I don't know how many posts I read on Nextdoor talking about, why doesn't the city do something about, you know, something happening in El Granada or Moss Beach? Because there's no city there. I mean, people don't understand the basic differentiation between the city of Half Moon Bay and the unincorporated Midcoast. But anyways, you'll get an increased knowledge of local government, the judicial system, and you'll have the satisfaction of making a worthwhile contribution to the improvement of San Mateo County government operations. I mean, isn't that its own reward, right? That you could be part of the solution that could get us some improved infrastructure, or, I mean, heaven forbid, internet or electricity that doesn't go out at least once a week now. Oh, yes, yes, that's my internet was out all day yesterday. All of ours were. Because an extension cord running from the other side of the hill across the 84 corridor? I mean, come on. We've got one extension cord running from Silicon Valley to here for the internet. And when, you know, somebody steps on it or drives across it, it doesn't work anymore. And we're out of internet over here. You know, a lot of people work from home and everything is driven through apps and the internet now. So when we don't have the internet, kind of a big deal, but one extension cord is what we've got. So if you want to make a difference, get involved. You have to be a U.S. citizen, at least 18 years old. You have to have lived in the county for at least 1 year. some basic computer skills. Again, that deals me out. Basic proficiency in English. Again, that deals me out. And have the time and interest to make this commitment. I do have that, but anyways, maybe you're a better candidate. Look into it. The deadline to apply is April 28th. Go to sanmateocourt.org/grandjury. Okay, let me wipe away a tear because I'm really bummed. Bummed. And I think universally Coastsiders are. That the final frame has come for Siebel. Are bowling alleys going the way of drive-in movie theaters, regular movie theaters, and miniature golf courses in the Bay Area? Because it seems like there's not any more bowling alleys. In fact, roughly two-thirds of the nation's bowling alleys have closed since they're kind of their height of popularity in the mid-60s. And this week, that reality came to the Coastside when it was learned that Sea Bowl in Pacifica will be closing at the end of May. A fixture on the Coastside, Sea Bowl opened in Pacifica on May 5th, 1959. Yes, Frank and I were there for the grand opening. And since then, many a Coastsider, if not every Coastsider, has spent an afternoon or an evening rolling a game or three, playing some video games, just soaking up the ambiance that is a bowling alley. Yes, there is ambiance in bowling alleys. Sea Bowl is local. It's got 32 lanes, which is, it's a good-sized bowling alley. It's a real full-size, full-service bowling alley. Pool tables, arcade room, bowling alley grub, and it's got that cool kind of space-age architecture exterior, right? The whole thing, ample parking, right? I mean, just, I'm sold on that right there. I never, one time, ever had a problem getting a parking spot going to Sea Bowl. And it has been hugely popular since it opened. Legend has it that when Sea Bowl first opened its doors in March of 1959, it was so popular that for three nights in a row, it never even closed. It was open 24/7, hosting several thousand patrons in a single weekend. Finally, they had to shut it down at 3 a.m. on Monday night because they weren't done building it yet. So they had to get the construction crews in. They had to close the place just to finish the construction because there were so many people in there. My son, who's a teenager at the high school now, rolled his first ball there. And you can see a picture of him up on the KHNB website or go on Nextdoor. There's a post on Nextdoor I saw. He rolled his first ball there when he was just 4 years old. And since then, we've been to many birthday parties, team parties, afternoons out. You know, it's great for those things, league nights, a place to kill a few hours on a drizzly Coastside day. We come from a bowling family. My gramps rolled five documented 300 games in his long, long bowling career. And some of, I'm going to get weepy here. Gramps is gone. Maybe I'll just skip over that until I can get a hold of myself. No, some of my very first memories of life as like a three-year-old, a four-year-old, a five-year-old were at league night at the Claremont Bowl in San Diego, going there with my grandparents and watching them and their cronies do league night for 3 or 4 or 5 hours on a Friday night till like midnight. The sound of pins, people laughing. Cigarette smoke. I mean, it was the 70s, so cigarette smoke, pinball machines, Claremont Bowl, that revered place in my life, torn down in 2005. My high school lanes, where I bowled, Parkway Bowl in El Cajon, California, is one of only five traditional bowling alleys left in all of San Diego County, down from 15 in 1979. And here's the thing that's really troubling about this. At a time when the Coastside is looking to develop more recreational opportunities for locals and specifically kids and teens, we're losing one that's been there for over 60 years. This is a major blow. The current owner, David Setso, sorry, David, if I'm not pronouncing that right, everybody knows I can't even pronounce my own name, sent out a letter to league bowlers. It was addressed to Sea Bowl league bowlers this week, informing them that May 31st will be the final day. From the letter, quote, "After 60 years of doing business here in Pacifica, we have made the difficult decision to retire and close our family business. It is with mixed emotions that we announce this decision. But we feel that it is a time to start a new chapter in our lives. I mean, nobody can, people can do what they want with their property and with their lives, right? Nobody can argue with that. But it's still a major loss. Those, both of those things are true. David and his family, you know, more power to them. Go do what you want with your life. No, you shouldn't have to be forced to do anything, okay? But the problem is that land, and I don't know if this deal has already been in the works for a while and if the property has actually even already changed hands. But the Pacifica, all right, let me back up because I'm getting all verklempt here. It's a major loss. There's now just 4 bowling alleys left on the entire San Francisco Peninsula. Classic Bowling Center in Daly City, Hometown Bowl in South San Francisco, Pinstripes in the Hillsdale Mall, and Bel Mateo in San Mateo. The thing that just makes this a doubly painful blow is Siebel's going away, and everybody knows what's going in there, right? Everybody knows what's going in there. Apartments. Up to 219 units. The Pacifica housing element, now the housing element is part of the general plan of a jurisdiction, like the county has a housing element, the city of Pacifica has a housing element. It's part of the general plan and establishes how the city will comply with state housing law and where it can meet regional housing needs as determined in the regional housing needs allocation. Okay, so basically trickling downhill is a set of requirements that each community needs to provide housing to deal with the housing shortage in California. And so each jurisdiction has to have this housing element to identify the housing needs of its area and how they can fill those needs. And so the Pacifica housing element has identified this as an available site for 219 affordable income units. Don't get all bunched up about that. I mean, people really, you know, like... It gets to be a socioeconomic issue, okay? In San Mateo County, affordable income is like 80% of the medium area median income. So like a one-person household would be like $104,000. So don't get bunched up about the affordable. Get bunched up about 219 units, okay? Because elsewhere in the housing element, it noted how a major problem is the infrastructure there, Highway 1. None of the roads except for Sharp Park Road go over the hill. They all go back. They're basically dead end cul-de-sacs that go back, head east, and get dead ended in the canyons there, along, what is that, Sweeney Ridge. Okay? So, Highway 1's the only route in and out there. The element itself says that Highway 1 is already at a service levels that are very bad, and additional housing will make it much worse. There's a 7-story apartment building that's going to be built right between Valimar and Lindemar, right on Highway 1, so it's going to get worse. And Pacifica passed some ordinance in 2017, I believe, that says that Highway 1 cannot be expanded at any level in any way unless a vote is made by the citizens in favor of that. And so otherwise it's illegal to expand the road. So until that ordinance passed in 2017 is rescinded or changed, they can't expand or widen or add any lanes to Highway 1. They're adding all kinds of units, including apparently 219 that are possibly going to go in the Seville location. All right, I'm exhausted. The whole thing just makes me bummed out. But we'll see what happens there. What we do know is that Siebel is going away. There's no way that a bowling alley will be there in 5 years. Whether it's just a vacant lot or 219 apartments, we'll see. But there won't be a bowling alley there. I got a bunch of emails, but you know what? We're going to hold off on those. We've got Nancy Marsh in. She's a board member from the Granada Community Services District. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Now, Nancy, just forgive me, Nancy Marsh, right? At some point during this conversation, I will mispronounce your name. It will happen. And all this week, while I've been thinking about the interview and interview questions, I catch myself calling you Nancy Grace. And I don't want to like get anybody all upset at you or a bunch of fan mail. It's Nancy Marsh, people, regardless of what I say from this point on. All right? Nancy Marsh, board member of Gowanus Community Services District. Nancy, how long have you been a board member for GCSD?
Just over 2 years. It was
only
2 years in December.
Years?
Well, what? I was on the Parks Advisory Committee for 3 years before that.
Even so, Nancy, I mean, in a good way, I feel like I've seen you there at those meetings for years and years and years.
It's
I can't believe
fine.
You've only been a board member for 2 years. Okay. If I may ask, how long have you lived on the coastside?
Almost 8 years.
Only 8 years?
I know.
What is happening here?
You can't be a local until you have 30 years.
I know. Like, I just hit 20, and it's like, I still feel a little sheepish about, like, because, you know, you go to these meetings, and you know, as a board member, it's kind of like it becomes like this badge of honor, a one-upsmanship with somebody else. Well, I've lived here for 3 years, and they hear some tittering, and it's three years. I mean, and then the next one, well, I've lived here for 10 years, like shrugs. Well, I've lived here for 20. Okay, now, but then by the end of the meeting, you got people, I've lived here for 57 years. You're like, okay, tip of the hat, old timer, right? Okay, 57. But it's like this one upsmanship of like, how long have you lived here? All right. Well, thank you for serving on the board. In my opinion, GCSD and MWSD, these are two of the most well-run government bodies on the coast side. Because I'm in the district, I've followed GCSD for the 20 years that I've lived here. I feel like it's been extremely well run. I don't know how you recruit board members for that group, but you do a good job.
It's actually not easy. So let's do a plug for elections and paying attention to local elections and local service. It is service and community service. It doesn't pay a lot.
It
takes some time. We do get paid for the meetings, the public meetings. For GCSD, it's $145 for a public meeting.
Oh, I'm sure that covers all the research and the
prep and the subcommittee meetings and field trips. And it's community service with a dinner out once a month. But it's important, and many people don't know how many of these boards exist. In the last election, I'd tell you when I was not quite elected because I applied as a candidate and was uncontested. So there were two openings, two people applied as candidates, and so you're on the board.
right.
It should be, a bit more competitive if that, particularly if you're not getting what you want from a board. Mid-Coast Community Council, as you know, struggles to recruit board members, and that one doesn't pay, and they meet twice a month. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of a frustration I have is that, and we've talked about it on the show, MCC couldn't even get enough people to even, like, just sign up so that they had to fill these seats rather than by election, by the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
They had to just appoint people or recommend people to be appointed by the Board of Supervisors. And yet, and we'll talk about the issues that your board is facing, people have no problem with just raining down, complaints and even insults on these board members, and yet they don't step up to run. And we don't even have enough people filling seats in the popular election. I mean, does that trouble you as someone who's gone through the process and is sitting there in the meetings and having to listen to these people?
Well, what I've learned in the 5 years that I've been in these public engagements is very rarely does somebody come to the meeting, Ruben, you are an exception, to tell you that they like what you're doing. It's important then, one of the things that I really brought both to the Parks Advisory Committee and the board are they ask the whole community. When you want to know something, send a survey out, send a postcard out, put up a big sign, ask people to send you emails so that you hear from the whole community. I appreciate the people who take the time to come to a meeting, whether it's on Zoom or it had to be in person.
Right.
To talk about what they want to talk about. But you have to bear in mind that you're hearing from people who feel particularly emphatic about something.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily represent the whole community, and I'm not saying that to diminish the views of the people who come.
Right.
But you have to take that in and put it in the context of what you hear and look to hear more broadly. In my career, I was a senior executive in human resources, so I'm not unaccustomed to people coming to tell me what they're unhappy with.
You've got a thick skin.
But I also, I think it's important to take that in.
Yeah.
They feel strongly about it. You need to let them say what they're going to say. You're not going to make everybody happy all the time. And don't judge. So it takes some deep breathing sometimes to sit and let it rain down, because you know, some people, when they feel very emotional about something, it can be personal. That they're saying how they feel. So honor how they feel, sit with it, and put it in the context of everything else you hear.
I mean, I hope people are listening to this, because whether you agree with Nancy or GCSD or whatnot, this kind of attitude and approach to the public service, to me, is appropriate, and like what makes a body function properly, because it can't be personal. It's not necessarily about what your personal position is, that you're there to listen and hear what people want to say. And I don't think people, I guess in this day and age, they don't come to these meetings with that in mind. And it's a great insight that you just offered, because as I think back to the public meetings that I participated in, yeah, like I went to the MCC meetings for many years, and occasionally there'd be a big issue and there'd be 50 people there. Twice in 10 years, there was a couple hundred people there on major
issues. Pump track,
exactly. The Moss Beach Playground. Those were two issues where there were hundreds of people there. But on a regular meeting, probably same for GCSD, there's like 10 people there. And it's the same 10 people. Maybe you'll get 5 or 10 more if there's something that they want to talk about. When I say talk about, that means complain about, like be upset about. Rarely is somebody there to go, Nancy, I love what you guys have done with the increased storage capacity in the Burnham Strip. That was brilliant. Thank you so much. I mean, there's an occasional weird person that will come in and do that. And when I say weird, a person like myself, it's like, thank you for doing that. It's a great thing, and you need to hear that. I'm saying to listeners right now, board members who are essentially volunteers, I mean, the stipend aside, I mean, they're people too, and they need to hear good compliments as well as what's on your mind. So seasoned speakers at these meetings will usually be like, my name is, you know, Joe Smith. I'm from El Granada. I really want to thank you for serving on the board, and I appreciate all the things you've done. You know, you're doing a good job. But, okay, that's fine.
Here's the thing I came to talk to you about.
Yeah, but at least they, like, acknowledge the service, right? All right. Well, okay, so that's a nice preamble, because surprisingly, you've got, like, a bit of a controversy going on in the GCSD district right now. And I say surprisingly because you just think, like, how can this be controversial? And that is, the GCSD is trying to develop a community center for the Midcoast. This community, I'll just kind of lay out the broad strokes and then let you run with that. So in case listeners aren't aware, because we got people listening from all over, Nancy. So the Picasso Preschool, which is a business that leases the land on the north end of the Burnham Strip, basically, along Alhambra Avenue in El Granada. It's been there for a long time. A lot of people have sent their kids there, and there's kids going there now. That property was sold a couple years ago, put up for sale. It's my understanding that GCSD put a, you know, if nobody else buys it, we'll take it bid. Nobody else bought it, so GCSD bought it. At that time, extended the lease of the preschool, but now it's GCSD's property to do with as they see fit. And that's what you're trying to do now, is you've extended the lease to give the current operator of the business there a couple more years to, you know, find someplace else, close things down. And you want to take that footprint, expand it into a community center based on input you've received from the community.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is that people that have kids at that preschool now are pretty angry about it. So can you kind of tell me where we are? I saw the CEQA report went out. Does that mean that this project is going forward?
The project is going forward. Can I just start with what's a special district? Because people don't really understand
yes,
that.
Yes, when I say LAFCO, people are like, what is that, a comedy troupe?
Yeah.
No?
Sometimes. Granada Community Services District is what's known as a special district. It's under a state government code that grants its powers, which are administered by the local agency formation commission, which is LAFCO.
Yep.
GCSD was formed in 1958 as a sanitary district, and it covered sewers and trash. Through the early 2000s, there was a lot of work done by local advocates to preserve the Burnham Strip, to keep it from development. It was owned various times by the Harbor District and others who proposed multi-story buildings and office buildings and apartment buildings along the strip. And if you're not aware of it, go to the intersection of Obispo Road and Portola Avenue in El Granada and look a bit south, and you've got a fantastic sweeping ocean view all the way to the Ritz and beyond. It's one place where you can see the whole coast of Half Moon Bay. So definitely worth preserving. The only building there at the time was the Picasso Preschool building, and there's one house a little further up.
Private residence.
They managed to, the advocates managed to get the zoning changed. So one of the issues around preschool or no preschool is that current zoning is called El Granada Gateway, which is designed to preserve the open space, preserve the ocean views, and minimize development. And it limits any development only to public uses, such as a community center or a nature center or a park.
Not a private business.
Not a private business, no commercial business. The current preschool operation, their business license is grandfathered, which was one of the things that complicated their sale. The special district, some of those advocates preserving the strip happened to be on the board for the Granada Sanitary District. And over what was a multi-year, I've heard 7 to 10 year effort, they petitioned LAFCO to add parks and recreation to their remit so that they could preserve the strip and make a park out of it. They were successful in persuading LAFCO, and there was a ballot measure for the district in 2014 that approved adding parks and recreation and became a community service district. Community service district, also under California law, has a list of about 35 different powers it could have. Many have just one, like a fire district or a police district or a water district. So Granada has four. Sanitary sewers, trash, acquire and construct facilities for parks and recreation, and program parks and recreation. So that's our limits.
Let me just say that this ballot measure was also controversial, and there's still people that are grumbling about it today.
Yes.
Because they think that somehow their sewer rates are going up, or their property taxes are going up to pay for this extra services. Can you explain that
Yes.
situation a little bit?
The ballot measure, Measure G, specified that there are two ways that the GCSD gets funding. One is by the sewer fees, which are specifically listed on your property tax bill. It's collected by the county on behalf of GCSD. The other is special districts get a percent of the property. Special districts get a percent of the property tax that you pay.
Not an increase. A percent
Not
of
an
what
increase.
You're already paying.
1% goes to the special districts, which is split amongst the special districts. So GCSD gets about 0.3% of the property tax that the residents in the district pay. What the Measure G said, now all for many years that property tax subsidized the sewers, kept the sewer fees low. Measure G specified that the sewer fees will go up because the property tax is going to be shifted over time to pay for parks and recreation. And as of last year, now all of the property tax, which is about at this point $850,000 a year, is being put in on the parks and recreation side of the budget ledger. And the sewer fees have been stepping up. They're still the fourth lowest in the county.
Yeah.
Granada should thank us for our hillside bowl of a community.
Because
we have mainly gravity-fed sewers, so we don't have so many pump stations and other infrastructure to keep sewers flowing. When the sewers are totally paid for by sewer fees, they still will be among the lowest in the county and definitely the lowest on the coast. So now all of that money is being put in the bucket for parks and recreation, and it will fund paying for the new Burnham Park. Burnham is a placeholder name. We're
right.
Working with the community on ideas for names.
Lots of ideas, yes.
More ideas. That's actually on the next agenda, third Thursday, whatever date that is in April. Yeah. We'll be talking about the park name.
Oh, nice.
And so it's paying for the park and community center. Now that I have a sense working on these, how much these cost, both projects will likely be phased because our commitment to the community is we will live within our means, and we have to retain a certain amount of that property tax annual income to pay for maintenance and operations. So whatever we build, we keep it in shape and keep it up to date and can make it a real community asset.
So it'll be phased. Will it also be financed?
It'll likely be financed. Okay. I think it'll definitely be financed. And we will go looking for whatever grant money and additional funding we can get, because that will just address the speed at which we can build out. So we have, those are our powers, sewers, trash, and parks and recreation. We've been looking for, we have the Burnham Strip from the preschool to the light at Coronado is owned by the district. And it's given a use permit to Sewer Authority MedCoast to put, thank goodness, $400,000 worth of stormwater overflow tanks.
Yes, but Half Moon Bay thanks you for that.
Yes.
Whether they realize it or not. Anyways, that's another topic for another show.
It's another topic for another day. We can build a park on top of those. It basically looks like 8 manholes. And they only have, it's only on high storm days that they are full. Or the other advantage for the plant is they can shut off the flow from the north to do maintenance of certain things in the plant. But it won't smell, I promise. The park will be fine. So we'll build a park on those, and we were looking for a place for a community recreation center to work with the park, to be a real hub. In the unincorporated Mid-Coast, there is no public community space, indoor space. And so we're looking for a hub. We looked at a lot next to the post office. It turns out it's too small now that I understand space. I think Harbor District bought it to build an office building. I think they also found out it's too small because they've abandoned that and they bought the Harbor Vista building instead. We looked at the fire station, which is still not on the market from the fire district. It would have been just okay, and we weren't sure that we would get away with whatever parking is there. When the preschool came on the market, and when you're talking about Siebel, there are people feel about Picasso Preschool the same way that people feel about Siebel. It has been there since, I think, 1993. Some people don't know that Picasso is the name of the people who founded it. Debbie and Mike Picasso took what was a nursery warehouse building with a little office on the end, converted it and built it, put lots of labor of love into it to fit it out as a preschool, eventually bought the building, and they ran the preschool for almost 20 years. They sold the business to the current owner, Candace DeCisto, in 2013, and continued to lease the building to her. During the pandemic, it was hard on a lot of businesses. It was also hard on Picasso Preschool. And I don't know all the details, so I can't give you all the details, but sometime during that process in early 2021, between the Picassos and the current business owner, they decided to try to sell the preschool rather than risk having it close. And it's complicated because the current zoning, nobody could get a new business license there. So they need to buy the property from the Picassos and the business from the business owner. The zoning and the two-person thing just made it complicated. They did have three, I understand, different interested parties that went to different lengths. It was on the market. Initially, they were only talking to people who would put a preschool there, basically preschool franchise providers who would operate a preschool there. It was on the market for about 2 months before GCSD found out about it, and by then it was under its third contract. So GCSD did put in a backup offer to the property owners. If, your deal doesn't go through, it is adjacent to the park property, which makes it a perfect location for a community recreation center adjacent to the park. Our staff, GCSD has two staff. With recreation, we might have three staff. The staff would be there, so you would have staff adjacent to the park and able to supervise park and community recreation center at the same time. It wasn't a unanimous vote from the GCSD board to acquire it, but it was a majority vote.
3-2?
It was either 3-2 or 3-1 and 1 abstain. I can't remember exactly. There were three votes to acquire it. I very quickly understood that it would take us at least 2 years.
Let me ask you, Nancy, because in listening to the meeting last month, there's some really emotionally invested people in this who, whether intentionally or unintentionally, seem to
be overlooking some basic facts here, like the fact that GCSD is not looking to put, to eliminate preschool on the coast side, to put this company, to this preschool out of business. Let me just ask you, if GCSD had not purchased it with this backup bid, they weren't coming in like overbidding people, like desperately trying to get this property. The position was basically, if nobody else buys it, we're here to, we want it. If GCSD had not put in that backup bid, what would be happening to the property right now?
It's hard to say. If the apparently, you know, similar to the family that's selling Siebel, the Picassos decided at that point it was their time to sell the property, take their equity after 30 years and do something else with it. And you can't fault them for that. It would only, if they couldn't find somebody who could take over the current business license to continue it as a preschool, then the only buyers would have been public agencies. It could have been, you know, Peninsula Open Space Trust. It could have been the county to put another mini library. Those are the only kinds of uses that it's zoned for, other than the grandfathered business that's there. They might have decided not to sell altogether. Some of the people who have very invested in it said you shouldn't have bought it. But we promised to make a community asset out of it, just a different community asset out of it. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of sympathy for the people who are losing what is probably half the volume, according to Coastside Families Taking Action, of full-time licensed child care out, not in a home, available on the coast. It's a big problem on the coast for people who need full-time child care. It's not, the problem is not so much preschool. There are a lot of ways that you can do early childhood education. We can deliver early childhood education in a multi-use flexible facility, community recreation center. What we can't do is the licensed child care facility, which has very specific requirements for indoor and outdoor space, and is not in our powers as a special district.
And this licensed child care issue is kind of a universal issue. This is not specific to Picasso or El Granado.
This is a national issue in the national news.
So that's another thing that just emotionally confuses this issue. And I appreciate your sympathy for the parents who are so upset. And I feel like it's almost exclusively parents of kids who have preschoolers there now. That's the main body of opponents to this whole thing, but it's their level of vitriol where they lose my sympathy, because they refuse to look beyond their personal interest in this and see that this is a national issue. It's not specific to El Granada, and everybody who has preschool age kids in this country is facing this issue. So they are not some unique group that is having, you know, their preschool or their child care opportunities taken away from them by this one government entity in El Granada. So to me, that's where, like, I wish people could be a little bit more objective in their viewing of how government operates and the greater good. Because from my perspective, and again, I've gone through preschool on the coast side. My child was in three different preschool or daycares because of this exact same situation. And it's just the reality in this country, and especially here on the coast side. But the fact that GCSD is trying to do something for the greater good that people have been advocating for decades, and now they're trying to do it, and a small group of people with a particular point of view is taking it personally and feeling like it's some personal attack on them. And that's where I lose my sympathy there, of like, I guess I'm still sympathetic or empathetic. I mean, I get it. I understand and I feel bad for them, but I guess I would also ask them to look at the bigger picture. And maybe that's easy for me to say, but as a person who went through this with my own child, it's not like I don't know what they're going through. So anyways, I'm sorry to jump in with that, but it is a national problem.
Yeah, it's when you're a parent of young children, it's a huge stressor. Yeah, and when you are a dual working couple, which many people are on the coast just to have the privilege to live here, it's a big stressor. And people have their kids on the waiting list from the time that they're born.
Waiting list, again, That's a universal.
It is. I moved to a new city 30 years ago when my kids were toddlers with a big new job and my husband also working, and ran straight into, you know, 1 to 2 year waiting lists for the only licensed daycare where I really wanted my kids to be. And you don't forget that over time. So I do actually empathize. What I'm really glad about, and I think he's serious about it, as our new supervisor, county supervisor, Ray Mueller, did come to the meeting before last, where we really made clear that we had investigated from about 6 different angles, space, zoning, our powers, costs, and so on, whether we could include a small, which would have been no more than 12 or 15 child, child care center within the preschool, within the community recreation center. And for a whole list of reasons, we really can't. I illuminated it a couple meetings ago.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Ray Mueller came to that meeting and said, I understand. He understands. Ultimately, we discovered we don't have the power for child care. It exists in a different power for community service districts we don't have. And that was really the definitive, we just can't do it. He said, I really understand this is a big problem on the coast. Give me as much runway as you can while I look for a solution on the coast to expand the child care capacity on the mid-coast.
Let me ask you, I have that in my list of questions here, because I heard that in the meeting, but it didn't, I didn't know what he meant by that, because what is he saying, that the county is going to get involved in preschool care now, or child care, like the county is going to open a center, the county is going to, runway for what? What does he think he's going to do?
Runway meant time.
Yes.
Give me as much time.
But for what?
And at our last meeting, we agreed, actually, last September, we added a third year to the lease because we do everything slowly, it seems.
So it's been extended.
And so at the last meeting, we've extended it through May of 2025.
Yep.
So from now, he has almost 2 years of runway. For another one of my retirement hobbies, I'm on the board of another nonprofit organization on the coast, and had a meeting with the county executive, at which the county executive asked if the building my other gig is in could be used as a child care center. They are actually actively, my impression is actively looking for where could there be space that the county could support that would support another child care, more child care capacity on the coast. It's difficult, and I have a lot of empathy for Candice DiCisto, who owns the business. She's trying to look for another location anywhere on the mid-coast. If it would meet the Title 22 requirements for licensed child care center with the indoor and outdoor space, it doesn't meet the zoning requirements for parking. If it meets the zoning requirements, it doesn't meet the Title 22. There are so many hurdles for people trying to do this business. There are regulatory reasons why the capacity is so low. So I'm hoping that maybe Supervisor Mueller can also help with those kinds of problems. And maybe the county can help. I hope so. And I hope Candace finds a new home and we retain that capacity, because it is a scarce capacity on the coast.
And it's important, no doubt. I mean, again, definitely have us both having gone through it with our own children. Of course, we understand that. Okay, we got about 3 minutes left. Oops. These are three super complicated questions that you have to answer in like 15 seconds.
So okay.
Here's the challenge for you. Okay, so at the last meeting, one board member who got a lot of accolades from the people at the meeting who are against this project asked, why couldn't we build a multi-story building or expand or build it out into the Burnham Strip Park area? And everybody that's wanting the preschool to stay was like, those are brilliant ideas. Why? Or even, I think she also suggested changing the mandate, the charter.
Applying for more powers.
Yes. Like, why can't those things be done?
On the expansion and the multi-stories, the fast answer is the zoning. We're limited to a 14-foot high building, and retaining ocean views, which keeps us from expanding out behind the building. Our whole expansion is behind the current facility, because we think between the local coastal plan and the zoning interfering with that ocean view, wouldn't be approved.
But just change the zoning. I heard that, right?
Yeah.
Right?
And then let's talk about the money.
Because if we tried to change the zoning, even if people supported that, these kids that are in preschool right now would be in high school by the time that zoning
yes,
was changed.
Yes. I mean, your son was probably 4 years old when we became a Parks and Recreation District, and he's in high school. That's how fast these things work.
Right, exactly.
Same with new powers. It took, as I said, 7 to 10 years to get the recreation powers. And we don't have the money. We only have the money we have, which we've already committed to Parks and Recreation. We likely, on the rec center, will only be able to initially renovate the existing footprint, the 2,800 square foot building, and then wait until we can do more financing, get grants, or we accumulate more money over years before we build a big, beautiful community room behind it.
Yeah, this is a vision for the next 10 to 20 years.
Yes.
Yes, Think of it
as a master plan.
My son's children might enjoy this community center, but it's got to start someplace. Okay, Nancy, I could talk to you for 2 hours about this. We got to wrap it up, but is there anything, any last comment you'd like to make about this topic or any other topic with regard to GCSD or yourself?
One really quick thing. Our assistant general manager, Delia Comito, who's been with the district for more than 20 years, is retiring at the end of June.
Oh, no.
And
Delia, say it isn't so.
You would be amazed at the range of things that she does, from making sure that the dog waste containers have bags to, clearing out the parking lot on the strip. She has earned her retirement.
What are you going to do without her?
Well, we are looking for a new assistant general manager. It is a jack of all trades job. We do have a general manager part time who's remote.
Yep.
So it's the eyes and ears and face of the district to the community for sewer permits, for issues with your trash pickup. Call Recology first, not Delia. And now adding, a park and a recreation center. It's got a really broad scope. It needs administrative skills, financial skills,
people
skills. Supervises one person now. And you can get more information about it at granada.ca.gov. The job posting is, scroll down the homepage and you'll find the job posting. But that's a really important, wonderful local job, great salary, good benefits. Right here in our local community. So we hope to find local talent for that job.
Good luck on that, because Delia is going to be hard to replace.
She is.
But I hope you get a great person in there, because it is an important position. GCSD is an important agency for the coast side. It really, in fact, is in El Granada, our most directly elected public officials.
That's right.
On the coast side that have fiscal and policy authority.
So run and vote.
Yes. Nancy Marsh, thank you so much for joining us today. I have like 30 questions I wasn't able to get to. Maybe we can have you back in the future.
It was a pleasure. It went so fast. I really appreciate it.
It does go. So I never allot enough time, but I really appreciate you coming in, giving us the time this morning. And, great discussion on this. Hopefully at your next meeting, things will go a little bit smoother. But as you said, you're a wonderful person that has empathy and can understand even the people that are upset with you. But appreciate that, Nancy. Okay, this has been another riveting installment of Coastal Windage, the Talk of the Coast. Next week, guest host in here. I will be gone. We will have David Oblovy. I'm just going to call him Local Gadfly. Everybody knows David. He will be the guest host next week. You don't want to miss that show. Okay. You don't want to miss any Coastal Windage, but especially next week. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. This has been Coastal Windage, the Talk of the Coast.